Hey guys, it's Vinny B. Raider Nation In the Huddle is all about giving our fans the best opportunities in life. TAT is a new product that allows smokers to enjoy the sensations of smoking with zero tobacco and zero nicotine content. Finally, a cigarette you could feel good about, similar to Raider Nation rituals of winning championships. TAT offers the beyond nicotine experience with its beyond tobacco-based material in taste, smell, touch, sight, and sound without nicotine or tobacco. TAT offers a better option to completely remove nicotine intake without compromising the smoking experience. TAT, beyond tobacco. Raider Nation, get your free pack of TAT today at TriTAT.com.
Broadcasting live from the R&R Studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, it's the premier destination for an inside look into the Las Vegas Raiders. You're in the Huddle with Vinny Bonsignor and Lincoln Kennedy, presented by Tequila Embajador.
What's good, Raider Nation? Welcome back to Raider Nation Radio 920 AM. I am Vinny Bonsignor, joined by Lincoln Kennedy. Brought to you by Tequila Embajador. You're in the Huddle. And we're going to go out to the Raider Nation guest line and welcome in Pro Football Focus, Steve Palazzolo. Sorry about that, Steve. And Steve, first of all, thanks for spending some time with us in the Huddle. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great. And pronunciation was perfect. You nailed it. All good.
You know, I'm looking at your at PFF underscore Steve, and I should have done the same thing. I'm Vinny Bonsignor, so it's a little bit difficult. I should have done that. That's probably a little bit much better handle for people to remember. But, Steve, I got to ask you right off the top, and I'm an avid follower of Pro Football Focus. I'm a loyal subscriber. It's a tool that I use covering the Raiders for the Las Vegas Review-Journal, so there's no doubt about it that I highly recommend it. Couple weeks ago, obviously, John Gruden has to resign, and it was interesting kind of monitoring the national take on all of this, in particular, what he left behind and the work that he left behind in his wake. And there were some extreme takes out there, and I wanted to get your thoughts on this in terms of the roster itself. And I saw abstract failure John Gruden was in putting together this roster. And from your perspective, you grade these players. Your publication, that's what you guys do, is you break it down, you grade these guys. And so you have a unique perspective on where this roster is. As we assess the 4 years that John Gruden was here, specifically as it relates to what he left behind, this team, where do you feel his stay here with the Raiders is and was?
Yeah, it's a great question, and I would say slightly better than I thought they were. I mean, because I'm looking at a 5-2 team right now that looks pretty good, right? That looks legit and has improved in some key areas, especially defensively. So, you know, if you would ask me at the beginning of the season what to make of the John Gruden era, I would say good job getting the offense on track. I think step by step they got the offense into a good spot. And, you know, showed Derek Carr. You know, there was a point in Derek Carr's career back in 2016 where he looked like, hey, here's a perennial top 10 quarterback. He's taking big steps. 16 was a great season for him before he got hurt. Then he kind of tapered off a little bit. And I think, you know, Gruden, they got him back on track, added some playmakers, developed some playmakers. I still see the development there. So I liked the offense. And my big question was like, man, the defense didn't get better at all under Gruden. And then this year, you see just a much better pass rush. They hit on some free agents and Casey Hayward and Yannick Ngakoue. Max Crosby breaks out, he's one of the best pass rushers in the NFL right now. So maybe there are some pieces on defense. That was my big concern coming into the year. I said, hey, they'll sustain offense. They're good there. Need to see some improvement defensively. You drafted Nate Hobbs, who fits the system really well. So I think they're moving in the right direction there. So overall, a little bit better than I expected, especially if this defense keeps it up.
Yeah, and we're talking to Steve Palazzolo from Pro Football Focus. Let's stay with Derek Carr. I didn't cover the Raiders or start covering the Raiders till a couple of years ago, and I was always kept an eye on him from afar, and it just seemed like it was never working, and I always felt like he was getting a lot of criticism along the way, especially when I got here and saw how divisive it was. You're either a Derek Carr guy or you hated him, and it still kind of is that. The quarterback that I've covered has gotten better each year, but I also believe, and we're seeing this a little bit in the opposite way with Patrick Mahomes, not to compare those two quarterbacks, but how important it is to have good teams around you defensively, offensive line, running game, weapons, all of that goes hand in hand. And now that Derek Carr does seemingly have those pieces in place, is it him getting better or just him playing the way he's capable of alongside much better players?
I think it's always a combination of both. You know, I use the term mid-tier for quarterbacks quite a bit, and that's not a disparaging remark. You know, those guys are awesome, but there's a big chunk of quarterbacks who are more dependent on their supporting cast. I think Carr has always been in that group, maybe the top end of that group now. So that's certainly a factor. But the thing I like the most, I actually wrote an article about this on PFF.com a couple of years ago. When you have that quote-unquote mid-tier quarterback, a guy that is divisive, exactly what you described, right? He's good. I believe in him. Oh, maybe I don't. You know, and you kind of go back and forth. When you have that guy, I think the best play is to be really aggressive. Is to let that, especially if you have a guy like Derek Carr, who's got just a fantastic arm, great touch. He can make all those throws down the field. In 2018 and 19, he was hardly throwing the ball down the field. He was very conservative. And I wrote this whole article on, if you have those guys, you got to be aggressive. Chuck it down the field. See what happens. Play a little bit more of a volatile game, you know, for lack of a better term. And they started to do that last year, and they're really doing it this year. And Derek Carr's number one in our big-time throw metric. Those are our highest-graded throws, accurate, on time, down the field. Carr has been pinpoint. And I think it's just this overall aggressiveness of the offense that has unlocked what Carr is capable of. And I think it's been great for his development, coinciding with the Henry Ruggs being out there, Darren Waller becoming one of the most uncoverable players in the league. So it's been fun to watch, and it's been great to see Carr tapping into the arm talent that he has, because I feel like it was they weren't doing that for a couple of years.
Steve, speaking of metrics, talk to me, put it in perspective on how you guys grade offensive linemen.
Yeah, so we split up pass blocking and run blocking. From a pass blocking standpoint, we're essentially asking linemen, you know, don't lose. So there's this expectation that you're not going to lose, and then we give negative grades based off if you do lose on a given play. It can be anywhere from a minus 0.5 to a minus 1, minus 1.5, depending on, you know, if you lose a one-on-one really quickly, that's worse than, say, you know, getting bull rushed a little bit to, like, the top of the pocket. So we go play-by-play. We do that from a pass-blocking standpoint, from a run-blocking standpoint, where, you know, did you add value on the given play? Did you, you know, double-team the three technique right into the linebacker? You know, the right tackle and guard can both get positive grades on those plays. If you lose a block, you can get negative. So it's going through every single play and trying to add production-based context, not did you bend your knees or did you have a bad punch or bad hand position. It's just did you win, did you lose on a play-by-play basis, and then kind of add it all up in the end.
Shocking that you would get an offensive line question from Lincoln Kennedy, one of the greats to ever do it. But piggybacking off of that,
I hope that's satisfactory for Lincoln there. I hope that's satisfactory.
It is. We'll ask more later, but it is for right now. Okay.
But piggybacking on that, because you know, I obviously follow the Raiders' grades diligently, and I did see that you had Alex Leatherwood, who's undoubtedly struggling at times, both at right tackle and at right guard. I think he's kind of found his footing a little bit more at right guard. But as a for instance, like last week, he graded out as an 8.1. At first, I thought it might have been a typo. I'm thinking 8.1. That's like just, you know, out of 100, it's horrible. But in his case, I didn't see many. You know, Carr didn't get sacked. There were some pressures without question and a few hits. But that kind of a grade in particular, when it's that egregious and that bad, like how bad was he getting beaten? You know, from you guys' perspective,
I'm watching four of the pressures right now. So part of it is the perspective, right? When you're a guard's just, the expectations are different. Guards don't lose a ton. So if you have a 4 or 5 pressure game, that's
right,
really bad at guard, which is different than tackle. The other thing is, you mentioned the sack total, the way we grade is essentially, you know, isolating the blocker versus the pass rusher. And so whether or not, if you have a bad block, whether or not that becomes a sack or just a pressure or a QB hit, it's very much on the quarterback and the supporting cast and, you know, did receivers get open and all that stuff. And last week in particular, pretty much the ball came out quickly, even though Leatherwood whiffed on a few blocks. So sack totals really aren't a good way to evaluate offensive linemen because, again, you know, if a bad block can become anything after that. So that was what happened in pass protection. We had 37 dropbacks. We had them with five pretty bad losses in there, four of which became pressures, and that's just a really high number for guards. And, you know, it doesn't always show up until you, you know, watch the tape, and I think if we went back and saw, we'd say, hey, those are pretty bad blocks and a high percentage of bad blocks for a guard.
Well, Steve, then the same question for defensive linemen from a defensive standpoint. If the defensive man doesn't beat his guy or doesn't make the tackle or get in the hole, is he downgraded? Is that affect that way as well?
Yeah, so it's not completely adversarial, but yeah, a lot of times the guy that's, you know, beating up on the guard, say, will get the same grade, but like in reverse from a positive standpoint. So yeah, we expect pass rushers to win. You know, when they win, they get positives, and it's kind of the same story. We always say don't judge pass rushers by sack totals. That's, you know, 5% of their plays. You know, the guys who win one-on-ones more often, those guys tend to be, you know, that actually projects to future sacks better than just looking at sack totals. So I think there's a lot of guys that stumble into sack totals here and there, which is a little bit, you know, dependent on other things. The guys who win quickly and most consistently are the best pass rushers year over year, and they tend to also lead the league in sacks. So yeah, we look at defensive linemen from the opposite standpoint.
We're talking to Steve Palazzolo from Pro Football Focus. Real quick, one more on Alex Leatherwood. He did have a pretty good run block grade, according to Pro Football Focus last week, and that's been his strength. And there's no doubt that pass blocking has been a work in progress. But from where you guys are looking at him, do you feel like there's a foundation there for him to build on, and that he can be maybe what the Raiders had hoped he was going to be before it's all said and done?
Yeah, I mean, we have a lot of data on offensive linemen, and it takes a while. It is the one position that takes the biggest jump in years 3 and 4. And I think that's intuitive, right? It's either, you know, some guys are growing into their body, you know, just you're playing against grown men instead of college kids. I mean, it is a tough, there's such a mental component. I've never run into an offensive lineman who isn't really, really smart, Lincoln. Because you guys have so much to process at the line of scrimmage. So we see a lot of improvement in linemen in years 3 and 4. There's always a breakout there. And Leatherwood he had some of the most impressive run blocks out of anybody in the draft class last year playing left tackle at Alabama. I mean, his highlight reel was incredible. So that's always been a good part of his game. And yeah, now it's just a matter of cleaning things up from a pass protection standpoint. And that, you know, is a challenge when you're moving from left tackle, then to right tackle, into right guard.
Yeah.
So he's been put into a challenging situation. Our perspective at PFF is, you know, we understand the context, but we have to, you know, grade what we see and then say, hey, look, the context is he's been asked to do a lot here as a rookie.
Right.
Lincoln?
Yeah, you know, I was just thinking about the whole analytics stuff and putting it all together and how much film or how much you guys have to do with it to evaluate every player throughout the games. But looking forward, how have you seen coaches and players take to the information being processed, and how what type of feedback have you gotten from them?
Yeah, I mean, we get negative feedback from players if their grades aren't good. We know that.
Of course, yeah. That's to be expected, right?
Look, we work with all 32 NFL teams, you know, and there are 32 different ways of using our data. There are a lot of coaches who love to use our stuff for one-on-one matchups, finding strengths and weaknesses. We're able to, you know, if Alex wants to go see, you know, his 10 negative plays or something from a given game, or his 10 positives, you could see that at the click of a button. So we've seen a lot of that around the NFL, efficiently using game planning more efficiently. Giving players, it's easier to give them assignments as far as, you know, studying their opponents. Coaches are certainly making better fourth down decisions and being a little bit more aggressive, increasing win probability, which is a lot of stuff that we've worked on. And then just from like a front office standpoint, because we grade every player from a production standpoint, that's different from scouting. So we have a lot of teams that just put our grades right up against their team grades, and it's a check and a balance, and it's another reference point. Especially when we disagree, figuring out where those disagreements are and, you know, just adding more information. So we're used differently by every organization, but pretty extensively, whether it's at the coaching level, player level, or from a front office standpoint.
Talking to Steve Palazzolo from Pro Football Focus, there's two guys that I need to ask you about, and they're a couple of rookie secondary players for the Raiders that are just playing, I think, at a fairly high level. Number one, Nate Hobbs, a fifth-round pick out of Illinois. I don't think anyone saw this coming, although when you saw him in OTAs and then in training camp, it just was a guy that you couldn't take your eyes off in practice. He was always doing something. If you could quickly talk about him and where he's at so far as a rookie.
Yeah, Hobbs has been fantastic. You know, he's been one of the highest graded rookies, especially on the defensive side of the ball. And I think when you look at the Gus Bradley system, he's had success developing these slot corners, actually fifth rounders. You know, Desmond King, when he was with the Chargers, Gus Bradley got a lot of production out of him. And, you know, so the Seattle cover three type of scheme, you know, I think Hobbs has taken to that, being the slot in that system. It doesn't give up big plays, and yeah, he's been fantastic so far.
And then also Jonathan Abram, I know that he made, or excuse me, Trayvon Morrig, the rookie from TCU, who kind of struggled a little early on, but I feel like he's been moving in the right direction. Your assessment of Trayvon?
Yeah, we liked him a lot coming out of TCU. I thought he had some of the best pure free safety skills, and we've seen that a little bit. He had a really nice interception a couple weeks ago, high pointing it, really nice job. And broke up a couple passes. I think he just, at TCU, you saw him patrolling the field smoothly and under control, and I think you're seeing a lot of that. Again, after a slow start from a grading standpoint, he's been really good over these last couple weeks. So I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan of Merrig, and I thought, you know, I thought he was one of the steals of the draft in the second round. So so far, so good playing free safety for them.
I agree. Steve Palazzolo, thank you so much for spending some time with us in the huddle. And thank you for talking Raider Nation maybe off the ledge on Alex Leatherwood. It takes a while for offensive linemen. This is my partner is Lincoln Kennedy, so I get a great insight on that. It's one of the hardest positions to make the transfer to from the NFL, from college football to the NFL. I know all positions are hard. Those offensive linemen get challenged early on, and it could be a work of progress. So thanks for that. Truly
thanks,
appreciate
Steve.
That.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Be patient. Yeah. They're still moving the ball, too. So.
True story.
There you go. Steve, thanks so much for spending some time with us in the huddle. Really appreciate it. That was Steve Palazzolo from Pro Football Focus, and you can follow him at @PFF_Steve. And I think he made some great points, especially about Alex. And Lincoln, look at Colton Miller, right? When did he make his big time move? Last year and this year. What is that? That's his third and fourth year, third and fourth year. So second and third year. It's important to keep that in mind, especially with the young offensive linemen.
Well, I mean, also keep in thinking, you know, when you talk about Colton Miller, he was thrusted in as a rookie, came in and played because probably arguably one of the most difficult positions on the offensive line, left tackle, and he was playing hurt. Because there was not a necessity. So that's when they drafted Brandon Parker and Colton Miller. And so, you know, Colton Miller was thrusted into that position, and he had to learn his way, took his lumps. Now he's playing progressively better, which, you know, goes to Steve's point, which I've always said, it's going to take time. Yep. And it's going to take time not only for them to succeed individually, but it's going to take time for them to seem on a teamwork method. And that's the hardest thing about it, getting them all on the same page at the same time.
And as he said, they're still moving the ball, and they're still scoring a lot of points. So there you go. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignore and Lincoln Kennedy, brought to you by Tequila Embajador, Raider Nation Radio, 920 a.m. on a Thursday.
Interact with the show. Text Vinny and Lincoln on the Sam and Ash text line at 69187 or tweet them at Vinny Bonsignore and at LKennedy72. This is In the Huddle with Vinny Bonsignore and Lincoln Kennedy on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
Back out to the Raider Nation listener line. Michael is in Oregon. How you doing, Michael? Looks like Michael is not on the line. Lincoln, by the way, thanks to Steve Palazzo from Pro Football Focus. Appreciated his insight. But Lincoln in particular about the young offensive lineman. And, you know, you could probably throw Andre James in there as well. He's making his first start in his career as the starting center, the first go as a starting center. You know, even for him, it's hard to get better just sitting on the bench. Yes, there's development going on. There's classroom work going on. He's getting practice reps, you know, these last 3 years. But there's nothing like strapping on the helmet and going out and playing against the best players in the world, snap in and snap out, in terms of progress and development.
No doubt about it. And that's why I said there's, you know, there are certain positions at this game that you just need reps offensive lineman is one of those, because you know, you can, a defensive lineman more times than not is not going to give you the same thing on every play, on every pass play, if he's worth a damn. And so you have to learn how to adjust your body. You're going to have to learn how to defeat him. You're going to have to see what his strengths are and what he's going to try to use against you. And you kind of do that through film study. But more experience that you get, the slower the game goes for you. I remember Chris Mims, my first year at a guard in Atlanta. Chris Mims was playing with the Rams. And I thought the guy was going to try to run through me. He ran around me so fast, I was stuck in my, like I was stuck in my stance, the move that he made. So it's an eye-opening experience when you get out there and you're doing it full speed.
Lincoln, what did you think about the grading system in terms of, you know, even though it didn't result in a sack, even though it didn't always result in a pressure, you didn't make the block, so therefore you get a minus on the play. I don't know. I don't know how to feel about that necessarily, but I'm going to ask you. You're an offensive lineman. Do you feel like that's a fair way to look at things?
You know, tomato, tomato, to each his own. The thing is that if you miss a block as an offensive lineman and he makes a tackle, obviously you get a minus. You know what I mean? But if you miss the block and he takes him, he runs himself out of the play, you know, why should you get a lower grade on that? Because you missed a block or you got beat? Well, keep in mind, the guys over there get paid too. So, you know, when it comes to the true analytics, and you know how super sensitive guys are, hell, they're sensitive about their Madden grades. They think they should be higher than they are. But yeah, they're super sensitive. I just think it's – I have a hard time understanding how truly – true it could be, what kind of computer system you have and how can you can truly grade it if the player doesn't make a play. You know, like I said, it was back in the day, it was either satisfactory or minus. You know, so if you were running to the right, you reach to the right, and the guy, the defensive lineman, all of a sudden, you know, went to his right real fast, like in essence went up under you. If he didn't make the play, we didn't get a minus. You
know, that's what I'm saying with it.
Yeah, that's the thing.
If you're not, if you know, it's hard to, you know, I don't know. It's just it's hard for me to wrap my head around if your guy's not wreaking some sort of a havoc, right, especially on those pass rush plays. You know, if you kept your quarterback clean one way or another, whether it looked pretty or whatever the case might be, I don't know. I tend to think you did your job.
That's the way I kind of refer to it, and that's why I said, yeah, there's a lot of things about the analytics that I don't get into or can't get into, because I just have a hard time seeing if somebody is watching that much film on every play. So on average, let's figure it out. You've got 11 players on the field, right? You got usually on average on an offensive day, you're going anywhere from 70, 75 plays, depending on the offense. That's on average.
Times you've got
somebody,
five.
Yeah, times five. And you've got somebody who's doing all that times five and breaking it down to get a grade out by what, Tuesday or Monday or Tuesday? So obviously they've
it's
got
usually out by Monday, yeah.
Yeah, they've got some computer system in place, and I just have a hard time figuring if that computer can really take into, because the eye test will tell you, if it could take into consideration that did that defensive lineman make the play, or did that defensive outside linebacker make the play, or so how can you be truly graded? Are you downgraded for getting only a 2-yard gain versus a 4-yard gain on a run? You know what I mean? Those types of things.
Well, yeah, and they do have, you know, they have former coaches that are part of their grading.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Chris Collinsworth, when he created that thing or helped create that thing, I knew what he was going for, what he was looking for in it. And it's been productive. I mean, there are people who live by the analytics. I don't have a problem with that. It's just how to say how truly effective the grading system is. Because if you turn that on, Alex Leatherman said, look, you got an 8 this last game. Like, damn, out of 100? What did I do wrong? I mean, I stank up the joint, didn't I? So,
right.
I mean, you know, that
there
that
were four, you know, he did give up apparently four pressures.
Yeah,
which, you know, definitely, but that's, they drop back quite a bit. So I to say 8, I don't know. That's the one that I had a little bit of an issue with, but you know, they have their way of looking at things, and for the most part, I thought he was fair in how he assessed things and explained things. And
I think there's a method to the madness. Obviously, you got to explain your way out of it, but yeah, it's just it's something that, you know, to each his own. Like I said,
I still wonder, and this is not. I love Pro Football Focus. I subscribe to it and I rely on it. But, and I forgot to ask him about this, I do wonder, Marcus Mariota's one play, one run that he had this year, it was graded as a 64. He had a 64 run grade on a 33, and all he had was one run, and it was a 33-yard run, which to me, I mean, I guarantee you that play was not designed to go 33. Are they literally saying that play was designed to go, you know, more yards?
Yeah, I don't know. I really don't know.
33, you're like high-fiving everybody on the sidelines on a 33-yard run from a quarterback. But anyway, it's all fun. And for the most part, and I truly mean this, Pro Football Focus for me has been very, very, very useful. Out to the Raider Nation listener line, Raider T is on the line. How you doing, Raider T?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Very good. Thank you.
Hey, so I've got two things for you. Number one, in terms of like the offensive line and the trade deadline, I was really happy to see them pick up DJ Fluker. I think that's a guy that can play guard or tackle. So I don't think they pick him up unless they, you know, at least want to look at him to see if he can help improve the line. So I'm happy with that. But the other thing is, you know, I was reading an article a couple of days ago saying that Mitchell Schwartz is almost done with his rehab, that he wasn't quite ready to come back. And that's a guy I'd like them to, like, kick the tires on if he's fully healthy and recovered, because I think that's a guy that could definitely help out at right tackle, because it's kind of been a, you know, rotating door of who they're putting there to try and have a serviceable right tackle. Secondly, I want a quick comment on Mark Davis's comments at the owners' meeting. It kind of echoes what I was telling, you know, called in about a month ago or 3 weeks ago, whenever the Gruden thing went down. You know, he indicated that, you know, basically he was upset with the timing of this release, that the NFL had this information, you know, back in June, and they could have come to, you know, the Raiders and let them know, hey, there's a problem here. You know, you may want to address this, because I find it hard to believe that, like, for example, if this would have been Kyle Shanahan or John Lynch that had this issue, I don't believe for 1 second the NFL wouldn't have gone to the 49ers ownership and tried to, you know, make them aware of it to try and deal with it in a less embarrassing manner, maybe deal with it and sweep it under the rug. So it's just, there's not much we can do. It's over. You know, you can't cry over spilled milk. But I just think it's another example of how, you know, the Raiders get the short end of the stick from the NFL when it comes to, you know, concern for them. I feel like Mark Davis also kind of indicated that as well in some of his statements. And, you know, it is what it is, but I think it's just more evidence of that. So I don't know what you guys think about that or the offensive line situation, but I wanted to throw that out there on the table.
Well, I really appreciate the call, Raider T. And Lincoln, you know, in today's world, generally speaking, you have like human resource departments, right, and rules and regulations, of course. I'm not necessarily sure that, you know, firing is the first option or asking somebody to resign is the first option, especially with private businesses. A lot of times, I've never been in this position before. I haven't done anything like that, and I won't. But usually there's like some classes or something that's offered. Like you try to rehabilitate the person first before kicking them to the curb. You know what I'm saying? So maybe he's got it. Raider T might have a point of maybe you approach the team and say, hey, look, this is what we found. I think your guy needs some serious help. And if he gets it, and, you know, maybe this is something that you keep, you know, on the down low and give him a chance to redeem himself. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, I think as long as they had the information, yeah, I think that would be only fair. You don't rush to judgment against somebody if it comes out in June. You say, we hear about these emails in June. Like, okay, well, hey, you know, John Gruden, hey, you got to address this. It's before the season. It's before training camp. Let's get all this stuff out of the way. And then if you find out that he has an issue or needs some classing or, you know, coaching or something like that, then that's something certainly that you can pursue. It's not a distraction. If it happens in the offseason, you have enough time to prepare on how to deal with it and show that you're working towards it. Maybe he has to donate, you know, $5 million to, you know, a woman's fund. I don't know. You know, whatever.
Well, let me ask you this. Under that scenario, do you think maybe you just do it privately and try to work it out?
Is anything ever private anymore?
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. I know that, and definitely. And there's always the risk that it's going to come out. But it just seems like maybe the first thing to do, if you had it in June, is approach the Raiders and approach John Gruden and saying, "Hey, we found this. It didn't happen yesterday. We right. understand that, but it did happen over a period of time, and it's kind of showing a little bit of a pattern in how you, communicate with this one particular person."
Yeah.
We need you to get help and yeah. maybe like not go public with it, but try to give him a chance maybe to handle it, privately. I don't know. I don't know if that's the right way to do it. But I know that in certain companies, that's the first thing that usually happens before, yeah. and then if there's continued slip ups, then it escalates things, to suspension or potential firing. And so, Raider T brings up a good point. You look at this and say, would it have been handled a little bit differently if it wasn't John Gruden or if it was somebody, Coach X from Team B? I don't know.
Yeah, but I think that given the amount of time, you could have definitely addressed it, and then you could have let John explain himself. After it, hey, to get a concise before you're having to rush to judgment. Because honestly, what John did when he resigned is he said, "I didn't want to be a distraction to the team." And right. he would have been a distraction, especially with everything that came out on that Monday, if he didn't step down.
Yeah.
It would have been a huge distraction.
Exactly. It was like a, 72 hours? I got to get my math straight. But it all unfolded like just in warp speed.
Yeah.
And again, that's what I think the Raiders have a little bit of an issue with. Like back in June, maybe we could have helped him get better in terms of the way he looks at things, the way he communicates. Was it deserving of this guy's just got to go and his life, gets taken away from him and livelihood and all of that? I don't know. I mean, the way it was presented, yes. The way it all came out is like, wow, this guy's got to go. But if you have a little bit more time to deal with it and sit down and talk to him and say, hey, you need to get some help and we're demanding that you get some help, maybe that was the better way to handle it. I don't know. It's a very complicated issue, but it does raise some questions of, had it been a different team, would it have been handled a little bit differently? And certainly, if there was one specific person that he really offended, and that was the boss of all bosses, the commissioner of the NFL, and you have to wonder how much that played a factor in it.
See, I have to believe that if it was another team, it would have been handled the same way. I just can't. When you talk about the timeline, you talk about Friday, and then you talk about what you saw on Monday, I don't know if you could have handled it any different.
Well, what about, I think the question Raider T was asking is, if you had it in June, would you have approached the team back in June? In defense of the NFL, perhaps, I don't know exactly how it all played out, but maybe it took them time. Remember, they got 650,000 emails. It wasn't just those. But those were definitely, I'm sure, red marked, and you got to look at these first because this is pretty egregious. If they had this in June, even if it was going to come out the way it came out in warp speed in June, like if you just took, if it all played out exactly the same back in June before games had become involved, it would have been obviously a different kind of a blow for the Raiders. It still would have been a blow, but it would have been a different, the timing would have been different. And also, I'm with you though, I can't see that the NFL, I don't know if it was a different team back in June, would they have approached that team privately? Because I'll say this too, Lincoln, there's some things that we already kind of know are being kept pretty private right now.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, without a doubt. And that's just it. That's why I'm like, for someone to leak it out, obviously you had a big name. You had a coach on a premier team, a standout coach. It's not just like, one of those coaches you don't know. Everyone knew who John Gruden was. So, it wasn't like it was just a situation where there's a no-name coach on a so relatively obscure team. And the fact that the team was in a position where they were still had a winning record at the time and everything kind of hit the fan.
Yeah, because what we do know about, if you listen to the women that were involved in Washington, there were some people that were put in some really bad positions and vulnerable positions and hurtful positions. So there was literally victims in that case that came forward and said, "Hey, I'm not putting up with this anymore. I shouldn't have to in my workplace." And as bad as what John Gruden did and said, and I'm not condoning it at all, he didn't literally hurt anybody in particular. Like it's just,
I don't know. It's interesting because when you look at what's going on in Washington and what we don't know about what exactly happened, that's where I'm a little bit conflicted. Like, how come? Why don't we know? I know the reasons why we don't know, because it's sealed information, but so too were those emails. Yep. Even the John Gruden stuff, they came about as part of an investigation that was supposed to be just privileged information between the lawyers and the people that hired them to investigate. So it's just kind of interesting how that part of it came out, but we don't know exactly what happened in the rest of this investigation, other than the fact that somebody got fined $10 million
right.
and had to relinquish control of their team. That rarely happened. Something had to have happened for that right. to happen.
Yeah.
Out to the Raider Nation listener line. Domenico is on the line. How you doing, buddy? Hey, do we got you, buddy?
Yeah, you got me. I'm sorry. I don't know what happened there, but hey, I gotta get this name down for you. You're Italiano, man. You gotta get this name down. Domenico. What day do we play football?
We play on Sunday. Well, yeah, there you go. Got it. I got you, brother.
Okay. All right. Hey, so listen, I actually called for something different, but I do want to add, I really appreciate listening to Lincoln's feedback on here, because I really appreciate the player perspective, especially in situations like whether you're talking about O-line, you're talking about the other day we're talking about off days, bye weeks, and then also with the Gruden thing, to get perspective from those in the trenches, those who've been involved, those who've had relationships with some of these folks, is always a really positive thing. So I appreciate it. So I wanted to throw that out there. So I wanted to talk Derek Carr as far as putting some respect on this man's name at this stage. I hope I'm not getting out of what the intention was of the show today, as far as I think that was a topic. But, you know, this man put some respect on this guy's name already. I mean, I think, you know, as Raider fans, we need to be careful what we keep wishing for, which is, you know, I was sitting in the stands on Monday night against the Chargers listening to some of the fans around me, and everybody's pissing and moaning about Derek. You know, they're mad at Derek. They can't stand Derek. You want to, you know, go try and draft another quarterback and hope that you're going to get a home run with this one, because, you know, it doesn't work like that. You know, not everybody's going to get lucky and pick a Tom Brady and have his situation happen the way it happened. Not everybody's going to get lucky and pick a Patrick Mahomes and get lucky with that situation as far as seeing what you can see. You don't know what you're getting. It's the luck of the draw a lot of times. You got a guy here who's faithful. He's diehard. He puts it all out there. I think, if I'm not mistaken, didn't he play with a broken back, for crying out loud?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He puts up major stats. He competes at a high level. He shows up every day. He's a class act. He's not a knucklehead as far as, you know, just acting a fool. Put some respect on this man's name at this stage. If the money thing, you know, it's going to be interesting, because you got Max, who's going to be coming up with something. This guy's playing into an elite contract.
Oh, we lost
Domenico, him. I appreciate it, brother. Thanks for the call. We got to get to a break. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor and Lincoln Kennedy, brought to you by Tequila and by Hodor, Raider Nation Radio, 920 AM on a Thursday.
You're listening to Raider Nation Radio, 920 AM. Now back to your hosts, Vinny Bonsignor and Lincoln Kennedy.
Eddie is in L.A. How you doing, Eddie in L.A.?
Hey, how you doing, Vinny? How you doing, Link?
What's up?
Good, 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 good.
Yeah, no. I think you guys bring up a great topic about John Gruden and how it all transpired. It's hard from afar not to think it was targeted, just because if they had the information back in June, in the summer, then why they couldn't get it out. But it is what it is. As far as what I do want to say is, a couple callers before was bringing up Derek Carr. I think Derek Carr has been our franchise quarterback ever since he came out in that preseason game. I mean, the guy hasn't had a complete team around him. I think he finally has it now. Working with Chucky, I think it took him to a different level. It's a shame that how everything transpired. I would love to see how the season would have continued with him here, but he's not here again. But I honestly, what do you guys think they need to do right now in the trade deadline to help this team just keep pushing towards the playoffs?
Man, it's a great question, Eddie, and I was on a show in Hawaii, by the way, earlier today, Lincoln, and it's hard to find an area that I think that is so pressing where they've got to get bring somebody in. And even if you are talking about the offensive line, what's difficult and problematic about that is, you know, to insert a new player into that five-man configuration and that dynamic and Rubik's Cube, if you will, and expecting anything better than what they're getting right now. It's almost as if, like you said, just let this group of five play, and then if Richie Incognito comes back, that's great too. And if you can get something out of him, that would be awesome. But that would be the only area that I'm looking at right now for like serious upgrades. But even at that, it's so late right now.
I don't know if it would. Yeah, I don't know if it would be worthy necessarily of an upgrade. But I do think, you know, I was kind of mulling it over, and want to address a couple points. A couple callers earlier was talking about Mitchell Schwartz, the tackle, used to be with the Chiefs, had back surgery. Now, from what I read not too long ago, he's still rehabbing that back, and he's still having some nerve issues. But it's fortunate enough they said he won't have to have another surgery, so that's promising if he wants to come back. I say that to say this. He might not be healthy enough. He's a free agent. He might not be healthy enough to pass a physical. And the last thing you want to do is bring in a guy who's had back issues and thrust him all of a sudden into the lineup where he's trying to block people. So I think you have to be sensitive on that. But, you know, somebody that came to mind, and he was with the team a few years back, was tight end Lee Smith. Now, Lee, I think, went to Buffalo, if I'm not sure, where he's at right now. But he might be in Atlanta right now, I think. He was a guy that was a good blocking tight end. He wasn't the guy who was going to get you yards. He wasn't Darren Waller or a Foster Moreau. But I say that because, to me, Foster, one of the things that Foster struggles at is blocking.
Right.
Blocking big defensive ends, blocking big outside linebackers. He struggles at blocking. One way that you can help solidify the run game and make it more effective is by having a tight end who's capable of blocking the perimeter, help you block the edge to help you close down and be able to do those stretch runs. If they had a guy like Lee, then I think they could probably do that a lot more effectively, like we saw when they brought in Nick Martin this past game to help solidify that, because they're, you know, let's face it, they're just down on tight ends.
Yeah.
You need that sort of jumbo package at your availability, and I really think it would help on goal line because, you know, to be honest, you know, Foster put in those positions a lot of times has been a liability, not an asset.
Yep. So that would be a position I would think about as well. Let's go out to Raider Ramon, the Raider Witch Doctor. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, what's going on, fellas? I just wanted to say this bull BS is very uncannery in the fact that, let's look at the history behind players, coaches saying some unsavory BS in the NFL league. You know, I can go back to, you know, I'm not trying to give John Gruden a pass, but I'm trying to say, you know, wait a minute, man, wait a freaking minute. Name calling is name calling. You know, I grew up in the hood, and you know, we call it capping. You know, you got capped on, or which is a form of name calling. I didn't grow up, but I lived in London. They call it ranking. You ranked on somebody, you call them names. I'm not saying name calling is good, but I'm saying people do it and it's funny and they're trying to joke. Okay. With that being said, you know, in the league, we've seen and heard some unsavory things by players. What was that white dude's name that played for Philadelphia? He was on camera and was distributing the N-word, you know, unsavory, and he was the wide receiver for Philadelphia Eagles.
Yep, you know, I remember that.
Riley Cooper, but hey, guys, we're running out of show, so yeah. I'll let you respond.
Yeah, Raider Ramon, thanks for the call. Yeah, it's just, I think the fact that there was just so many, there was so much, and it came double-fisted, the one and then the other. It was too much. And, you know, I think that the Raiders did the right thing and everything worked out the way it should have worked out. It makes you wonder, again, you had it in June. Could there have been a better way to maybe handle it, especially for the Raiders and those players, and so that they didn't have to deal with, you know, all this in the middle of the season. I want to say thanks to Steve Palazzolo for joining us from Pro Football Focus, you know, shedding some light on their grading system. Always a great asset and always great enlightenment. Lincoln, thanks so much. I will see you. Enjoy the weekend. We'll see you, talk to you next week.
Absolutely.
Damon Cotton holding it down at home base. Appreciate you, brother. Thank you so much. To the listeners, I'll be back at it tomorrow, 4 to 6 p.m. I'll be live over at the Treasure Island, the Golden Circle Sportsbook. So come check me out there, 4 to 6 p.m. in the huddle. Brought to you by Tequila Embajador, Raider Nation Radio, 920 a.m. Hey, guys, it's Vinny B. Raider Nation in the huddle is all about giving our fans the best opportunities in life. TAT is a new product that allows smokers to enjoy the sensations of smoking with zero tobacco and zero nicotine content. Finally, a cigarette you could feel good about, similar to Raider Nation rituals of winning championships. TAT offers the Beyond Nicotine experience with its Beyond Tobacco-based material in taste, smell, touch, sight, and sound without nicotine or tobacco. TAT offers a better option to completely remove nicotine intake without compromising the smoking experience. TAT. Beyond Tobacco. Raider Nation, get your free pack of TAT today at TriTAT.com.